This podcast is brought to you by Tavor. Tavor works with only independent breweries around the world. They ship their best and rarest beer right to the doorsteps of craft fans around the country. Members get to choose which beers to buy, and two new beers get added to the app every day. Pay for the beers as you add them to your grate, then ship whenever you're ready. Much more cost-effective than buying and shipping one-offs. Download Tavor now. Use code JUMPSCARE for $10 off after your first order of $25 or more.
I mean, what's your take on the Blair Witch at this point? Do you think she exists?
I don't know.
You are listening to Jump Scare, the podcast that sees it coming. I'm Shanice, a longtime horror fan.
And I'm Will, a horror fan as well.
Jump Scare is the podcast that's here to look back, look ahead, and get down and bloody with horror movies. And we are starting a new arc.
That's right. We are doing found footage this week.
So spooky. As we do with all of our movies, we're drinking something special. What are we drinking, Will?
I like that you say it's special. We are drinking a cocktail, in quotes, called The Blood of the Innocent, which I looked up online.
Spooky.
Downside, it's just vodka and cranberry. Some of you may call it a Cape Codder. We call it The Blood of the Innocent. Upside, it's what witches drink. So we're drinking it too.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
it's pretty yummy.
Yeah, it actually goes down really. Be careful when you're drinking it. If you're drinking along at home with us, be careful.
So let's talk a little bit about found footage, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
So found footage, I feel like, has definitely changed over the years, but essentially it's always someone's found a tape or a file on a computer, and it is spooky, it's cursed, it's going to lead to bad things.
Yeah, definitely. It generally has a lot of, like, shaky camera work. You don't necessarily see the bad, whatever it is, until the end. And it's usually, it's kind of like either low budget or like intentionally made to look low budget, because it's supposed to be like amateur, generally amateur filming that someone has found.
Which is hard to do. It's hard to make something look low budget.
Right. Something that makes something look low budget and at the same time like look good. Right.
Yeah. And it's always some sort of like, I feel like they always start off as some sort of family film or something like that. It's always got... For found footage, you're always dropped in the middle of it, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah, it always starts out fairly innocuous. It doesn't look like a horror movie up front.
Right, yeah.
It's interesting to see the actors try to look like they're not acting, which is always interesting. It's like the performances are always very naturalistic, or at least attempting to
be. It's always a, stop filming me. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Put the camera down.
Exactly.
But it's definitely switched from when it first became a big thing in pop culture to now. So right now, found footage is always either on some sort of cell phone or in the middle of action. And I wouldn't say for early found footage films it was that way. It was the sort of thing that the story was being built around you, which doesn't make a lot of sense. That idea will start to make sense as we go down this arc of found footage.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, as opposed to like the slasher, found footage is a trend. And we're kind of, I think, on sort of the far end of the trend. Obviously, these movies are still getting made, but they're not. There's not the rush of them that there was a few years ago. So it's interesting to look back on a trend like this at sort of the far end of it, but without too much space.
Right. And I think it's a sort of trend that it comes back. It's cyclical in the way that technology changes. So first it was home video. So people with video cameras, and then it became cell phones and having that readily available. And then it became webcams. So like found footage is a trend, and it becomes a bigger trend depending on how our technology has changed, which is always really interesting because it completely changes the feeling of a movie. If you're watching it from like a webcam on someone's table versus like a cell phone sort of footage, like think Cloverfield.
Yeah.
It's a weird trend, but I'm glad that it'll never die.
Right. Yeah, it'll certainly never die.
So our first movie, we decided to kind of go with the OG, which is not really the OG of found footage, but it's the one that everyone thinks of when they say found footage.
Yeah.
And it's The Blair Witch Project.
The Blair Witch Project. 1999. We had to start here. this is what started the trend. This is what started, in a sense, like viral marketing itself.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So just a fascinating cultural force. So we're going to talk about that. But we also wanted to look at the movie itself as a horror movie.
Because it is a horror movie.
At
its core, it's supposed to be a horror movie. When we look at the genre, it's psychological horror, which I would kind of argue.
Yeah, I'm not sure
I don't think it's smart enough, to be honest.
I agree.
So this is 1999. I was a wee babe, so I definitely did not watch this movie when it came out. Did you watch it?
So I did not watch it, but I was exposed to it because I was in my friend's bedroom or basement or somewhere where young, like, middle school dudes
hang out.
Yeah. And I opened up a copy of Rolling Stone, the magazine, back when hard copy magazines existed. And there was a 2-page spread about the Blair Witch legend. And it wasn't immediately clear or clear at all that it was promoting a movie. What it was like, this is a weird thing that happened. There's been all these, like, violent happenings in this town. And then there was some footage that was discovered. And then it was kind of like, you know, stay tuned to this story for more developments. It wasn't quite like a news story, but it was not, hey, here's a movie and here's some backstory for the movie. It was like, these are things that actually happened. Isn't this weird? We found this footage. I wonder what's going to happen next.
But like, I don't know. Isn't it weird at that point in time to be like, why the fuck is this news story in Rolling Stone?
I mean, it was an ad, but it wasn't clear what it was promoting. And it did not anywhere say that the history it was explaining, sort of like this witch was driven out in the 1700s, and then all these bodies were found and all these children went missing. It was portraying it as fact. And like, listen, eighth grade me was like aware that this was probably not 100% true, but it was presented with absolute earnestness, which pre-internet, which this essentially was, we were, I think, all a lot more gullible for that sort of thing.
Well, like, you didn't have Snopes. You couldn't, like, go check if something was a lie or something.
Right.
You just sort of had to go with the gut feeling and then, like, hop on your favorite forum and be like, yo, did you see this? So they wouldn't really show us people dying, right?
Right. So I just thought it was the coolest thing ever when I found it.
The marketing for it is amazing. So they really went hard in with the whole, these people are missing. So at Sundance, they were giving out the flyers of like the actors were missing and that the actors were actually students who developed this film. And then this is how it was made, which worried a lot of people. I was reading in my research that at one point, a detective, a police officer from Maryland, called one of the directors and was like, felt terrible, was like, can I do anything to help? And he had to be like, it's not real. So like, don't worry. But a lot of people fell for it because they truly did everything in their power at that time to make it real. So they created a website,
mm-hmm.
and like, were updating it with updates about like what was going on. At one point, I found out that they aired a documentary on like a sci-fi or Discovery Channel about the Blair Witch legend before the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
So like, really selling it to the audience of like, this is fucking creepy and it's real.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, people just hadn't really heard. I mean, some people probably had, but for the most part, the public hadn't really heard of presenting fiction as total fact. Like, they were essentially just lying there. Like, these people, all the actors were listed as missing, presumed dead.
God, they're poor families.
Right? And people were probably aware that it was some sort of marketing campaign, but there was just enough ambiguity they were like, oh, well, maybe the movie itself is fiction, but I think all these things really happened in this town. So maybe it's like, maybe there's some truth to it. When obviously none of the history is real.
Right. But it was structured in such a way that it could be real. Like, mm-hmm. we all, doesn't matter where you live, like, have stories, like urban legends about things that could be. So like, it was built in a way of like, well, that could, like, I believe in the fucking Jersey Devil because, like, those are the stories I was told as a kid. But if you were to say that to anyone else, you'd be like, what? No, like, we don't have that. Like, that doesn't even make any sense. But, like, it could make sense because it's from your area.
Right. I also, I remember thinking about Roanoke, especially when I started reading about this. Because it's, like, the same area. It's something that really did happen. I mean, we don't know what happened. Probably something explainable. But, like, maybe it was the Blair Witch that got them all.
It would make sense.
Right? So there was a lot of this swirling around. Fact and fiction were hard to separate. And man, it was cool. But no, I didn't actually see the movie until like many, many years later. Because in 1999, as a kid, there were just way less ways to see a movie if you weren't going to go see it in the theater.
Right. Totally. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I don't know. I watched it, I want to say a couple years later, probably like in 2003, 2002 is when I was allowed to watch it. And it had made its premiere on FX. So I like watched the cable version first. But I remember my mom going to see this and like my mom hates horror movies. And she was so scared. And like my older cousins had seen it. And like everyone who talked about this movie was like, it was terrifying. And then the first time I watched it, I was like, it was scary, but like not for the reason that I think it was meant to be scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me ask you. So you were disappointed the first time you actually saw it, given all the hype?
No. So
okay.
I wasn't disappointed the first time I saw it. I understood it. And I loved it the first time that I saw it, but I think that I loved it so much because this is before I found my career in marketing. And I love that about it so much. I think I like conflated those two feelings of like, oh, I must love this movie because I love the lore of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm an adult who works pretty successfully in marketing, I'm just kind of like, ah, this movie's fine, but like the marketing is awesome. Like now I'm kind of disappointed in myself for loving this movie so much. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah, I was disappointed when I finally saw it. Again, it was many years later, so I was expecting a lot, and also at that point, I'd seen a lot more horror than I had in 1999. But I remember the first time I watched it, just being very put off by how much of it is just like unlikable people yelling at each other in the woods.
Right, yeah.
In kind of a gross way that seems a little more like reality TV than horror.
Yeah, it's there's no plot, really.
Yeah, no, there isn't. But I do think there are tremendous things about it, and especially rewatching it for this podcast, I saw a lot more that I like about it, even though I still don't think this is a particularly fun movie to watch.
I think of all of our found footage films, this is probably going to be the weakest.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I feel like this is one of the most well-known, and it's like, wow, if you just like dig a little deeper, like it gets better, I swear.
We should get a bit into like who made this movie and sort of what the story was for its production.
Yeah, we totally flew by it because like these guys didn't do much after.
Yeah, it's true. There's not much to say. So this movie was directed by Daniel Merrick and Eduardo Sanchez. Daniel Merrick didn't really do anything. I mean, he did like a handful of films that never really went anywhere. I think mostly in the horror genre. Eduardo Sanchez worked with him on those movies and then also had like a little bit of a career directing like TV episodes. He did some Supernatural episodes. He's done a couple of Lucifer eps, like a few movies here and there, but nothing that's really caught.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like they've built a career on their skills of directing.
Right.
Which is interesting. I think it's a sort of thing. Both of them definitely stayed within horror, which I think that they both can really appreciate. I think that it's interesting that, is it Daniel that went to do Supernatural?
I'm not sure, honestly, which one of them it was.
It makes sense to do something like Supernatural or like Lucifer because it's within the same vein
mm-hmm.
of this sort of like horror culture sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think either of them from like all the articles that I've read in interviews expected to start a career from this. I think they were just both really excited to like make a movie.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they both had a good idea and they managed to make their good idea hit beyond anyone's expectations. And that might've just been their last good idea.
They got lucky. You know? That's
right.
It.
Sometimes you just have one.
And then none of the actors. So one of the there's three main actors in this movie because we're following the three quote unquote students. Heather Donahue doesn't act anymore.
No.
She's written a couple books. I didn't read any of the books, but I read some of the plots, and she's like super into weed,
mm-hmm.
Which I expect truly.
Yeah.
Then you've got the Josh and Mike.
Yeah.
And Mike still acts.
I think it's Josh.
Josh, the cameraman.
He's had a pretty good career. He's been in a lot of TV shows, mainly as like one episode appearances. He hasn't, you know, been a star in anything, but he's like worked steadily, you know, in like network television and that sort of thing.
That's so interesting because we were talking about this before. It's not the kind of movie that, not that they're bad actors, but I don't think that this is the kind of movie that like shows your acting chops.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the improv. I will give them that because they were just given an outline, allegedly. But this isn't, I didn't think it really took a lot of acting skill for this movie. I think a lot of the legwork for this movie wasn't done during the movie. It was the viral marketing around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so hard to kind of talk about this movie because it has in itself has become its own legend of the way that we talk about it. But yeah, no one really hit it big from the Blair Witch Project.
It was kind of a one-off, like Sleepaway Camp, like a couple other movies that we've looked at. And again, we continue our trend of directorial debuts.
It's just there's so many of them.
There are
you
so want
to make a movie, you make a horror movie.
Yeah, totally. So this movie cost about $60,000 to make. And there are a lot of estimates about different costs. And obviously, it doesn't factor in the marketing campaign. There's a lot of different numbers floating out there. I think $60,000 is like the official budget. A little bit after the film was released, some experts crunched the numbers and said, we think this is about $60,000 spent. And it made like $286 million.
Jesus.
Yeah. Which I think makes it one of, if not the most successful indie film by sheer profit of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, people were ready for it. They wanted it. There's so much built around that, of course, it was going to make a bunch of money. Everyone was talking about it. You had to go see it.
I guess we're skipping ahead a little bit, but can't emphasize enough that this movie came out like right after Scream and like horror was kind of waking up again. So
it was making its way into pop culture. Like, it was cool to be into horror and to like talk about this and like go see these movies. So what the fuck moments in this movie are so many.
Yeah, so many. Even though the movie is kind of grimy and scattered, there are some great, great moments in this movie.
There are. I wouldn't know that so well because I get motion sick and this movie is so shaky.
Yeah.
So it was the sort of thing that I had to watch twice. I was like, watched it once and then I was like, oh God, I gotta pop a Dramamine. Let me watch this again. And then I was like tired and watching it. But it definitely hits beats.
Yes, totally.
So we've got best scares, iconic moments, and like body counts. And I feel like this movie, even though it's slow, definitely has like a really good like scare moments that are like classic jump scares.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think the best scare is, I think, the kids outside the tent. Because it's so, like, fuzzy. It's hard to really hear at first what the actors are freaking out about. There's a lot of that. And it's kind of like, how do you make a low-budget movie? You don't include the sounds. You just have your actors scream about hearing sounds. But when we, as viewers, realize that what we're hearing in the middle of this, like, dark, pitch black, rainy forest is like children's laughter. That's
so
terrifying to me.
It's so scary. I agree. And it's also like, it's not just the like laughter. It's the fact that the tents start shaking too.
Yeah, right. They're like right outside.
It's like kids are like mocking you. Like that's really kind of scary because kids are cruel.
Uh-huh.
It's dark. The laughter really gets to me.
Totally. Because, like, the first night, they're hearing the sounds. It's weird, but it's absolutely something you could explain. Like, it's an animal, or it's, like, branches falling down, or it's, like, rocks. Like, you're in the middle of the woods. Like, things happen in nature, and they make weird sounds. And at night, those sounds can sound strange. But when you hear the kids laughing, to me, that's, like, when you really, when the actors realize that there's no going back. That, like, it's not that they're just lost. It's like they're at the mercy of some like demonic something.
Yeah, it's like it becomes a real kind of scare. It's no longer like, because I feel like the first couple nights you're like, what is that sound? And then it becomes very, very, like, it's very clear children's laughter. You're kind of like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be any kids in the woods right now. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
My best scare is a couple moments after that of when they're running. So they leave the tent after this whole thing happens. Got Josh holding the camera, Mike, and then Heather running. And it's when Heather goes, oh, my God, what the fuck is that? And she starts freaking out. The camera doesn't pan over to whatever's terrifying them, which is so scary because you're like, what did she see? What are they seeing? I'm like, it just like the anxiety level of that moment.
Yeah.
Is I can't handle it. My palms start sweating because there's nothing scarier than not seeing the big bad and hearing how everyone's reacting to it.
Yeah, totally. Most iconic moment.
There's so many.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, for me, I think the most iconic moment for this movie is the thing that everyone recognizes, and it's the Heather crying.
Oh, sure.
It's the poster for this.
Yeah.
I think Scary Movie made fun of this.
It did, yeah.
And for me, that is the most iconic moment because that's the sort of moment that you're like, fuck. Like, it's all over. Like, you don't... I knew I had 10 minutes left in the movie because I'd seen it before, but I can imagine it's like an audience member just sitting there and going like... Where do you go from here? Like, you've officially given up, and that's just, she's so earnest, like, apologizing to their parents, her friend's parents, her parents. Like, that's just such a, it's so great because you don't even, it's not even a very well-framed shot, but it's just, like, the emotion that's put into that and, like, the way that the tears, like, well up in her eyes, you're like, fuck, it's all over for her.
Yeah, it's brilliant, and it's so claustrophobic, too. And I love that it looks... like really cold and wet for this, at least the second half of this movie. Like she looks like she'd be miserable even if she wasn't terrified. It's just so bleak.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
What's your most iconic moment?
So for me, it's when they find the little stick figures hanging from the trees. And it's, again, to me, it's like, it's showing them that they're not just lost in the woods, that something is going on. That there's intentionality here, there's like intelligence here, and it may be hostile, and it's certainly something that's beyond their understanding. I just think that's so iconic to me to find that in the woods. And then obviously that also became kind of like the Blair Witch sign, which in the early 2000s was like everywhere. That was like a thing that everyone in America understood. It's like, oh, that's the Blair Witch sign, and it's spooky. I don't think True Detective's first season would have had any of the imagery that they had without that scene in Blair Witch and how popular those little stick figures got. Finding that in broad daylight before the panic sets in, but like as a viewer, you're going like, oh no.
It's on the posters. Yeah. Oh no.
Oh no.
And like if you had looked at the website, you knew that like, oh, this is the thing that the Blair Witch would make if you had all of that context to go with it. I think what also kind of makes that iconic/creepy is that it's so simple. It's not a big bloody thing that like is getting your heart rate going. It's scary because of how simple it is.
Yeah.
And that's when like in broad daylight you're like any other place that you would find this, you'd be like, whatever, like someone made this. But because it's in the context of this movie, you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
It's over. Yeah. So the body count is weird.
It's weird, yeah.
In this movie. How do we define a body count?
So we've been saying people who we see die on screen.
Which we don't really?
Yeah, we don't see anybody actually die. And we hear people that we think are dead, we then hear their voices right up until the end.
Right.
So it's possible nobody is dead. I really think the marketing says it best. They're all like, we have three people missing, presumed dead. And a whole bunch of historic figures that are apparently victims of the Blair Witch. Or they're victims of just like an unrelated crazy person in the woods.
I mean, because technically it wouldn't make sense for the Blair Witch to kill them because they weren't kids. The three adults. It could be like a crazy person and like a hermit in the woods.
Yeah.
But we don't see anyone die. But we do like, if we presume that they are dead, we do hear Josh's death. In that weird way.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Well, Yeah, but like we kind of hear him die twice. He goes missing one night, and then we hear him screaming the next night, and then we find what seems to be his like parts of him the next morning.
Oh, the teeth.
Oh my God. So like I think we at that point assumed he was dead, but then the next night we hear him again.
Mm-hmm. So he's being tortured. Yeah, that's what she does.
Right.
Okay, so we do see one dead body, and that's the rat. There's a rat. And she goes, like, what do you think caused this death? Was it witchcraft? And Josh goes, or maybe it was God. Because they find a dead rat earlier in the movie. I care a lot about the animals, Will. So.
Yeah, no, you should.
But we don't really get a body count. And I don't think that it's necessary for this movie to, like, have those deaths be explicit.
Yeah, I like the ambiguity. I think it adds to the sort of mystique of the Blair Witch.
God, yeah, this movie is like, I guess it is a psychological horror.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is. I mean, with the history, the Blair Witch seems to have other people do all her actual killing, or at least take the blame for it. So, again, it gives everyone there, like, plausible deniability. Like, well, maybe it's just a crazy person.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And in the really, really shitty sequel, the Blair Witch doesn't kill anyone. She possesses someone. So.
Oh, okay.
But that one, you do get a body count. But it's not a very good movie, and it's not worth talking about.
Uh-huh.
So what didn't work in Blair Witch?
Yeah, so there are long stretches of this movie that are just the actors being really ridiculous and unlikable. And it's just hard to watch to me.
You really didn't like them.
No, I hated all three of them. I hated how quick they started panicking. I hated how they couldn't just find their way out of... I mean, they're in Maryland. They're not in Wyoming. Maybe there's some big tract of woods I'm not aware of in Maryland that, you know, you could get lost for a week in. But I don't know. I just found them really unlikable. Even from the start, I was like, these people are like 90s cliches and I hate them.
Yeah.
And so making a lot of the movie, just watching them be themselves, to me was difficult.
Yeah, I agree that it didn't work because your characters, I don't think there has to be a hero in every movie.
Sure.
But there's got to be someone that I can kind of be like, oh, you know, I'm a little sad about their death.
Yeah.
There's no one here that I'm kind of like, you fucking deserved it. Like, you're stupid. What's happening? So I think that didn't work. And I think, like, the switching of the cameras didn't work. I really didn't like that when it goes from like the home video to like the film. Stylistically, like, I get what they're doing, but like, you're not making a documentary anymore. So please stop switching. It does nothing for the story. I don't know. I just really hated that.
Yeah, I could see that. It is a little confusing when that switches. And they're constantly like, get this camera, get that camera, no, get this camera.
Like,
and
it's too, like, much.
Yeah, right.
Focus on one thing. Give me a story. And I think that's another thing that didn't work is the fact it didn't have an actual script.
Uh-huh.
I think you got what you wanted out of them, but like they had, I think, 19 hours or something, or I don't know. They had a bunch of film that they had to cut.
Yeah, it was like 20 hours into like 90 minutes or something.
And I'm not sure that he made the best choices into showing us, like, maybe we could have liked the characters a little more if you didn't show us all of their panicking.
Yeah, the panicking just going on and on and on and on and on. Yeah, I would be really interested to see what got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think part of that, not liking them and, like, the way that it was cut is the pacing of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can appreciate the fact that nothing truly happens towards the last 30 minutes. And, like, that was part of the marketing of, like, you won't believe the last 30 minutes of this movie. But then give me other stuff in the beginning. Like, I feel like in the 90s you had to go into this with having bought into the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get enough information about the Blair Witch, really? So, like, you have no reason...
That's true.
...to care.
Yeah. Yeah, if you weren't... Yeah, if you hadn't read a bunch of stuff in the marketing, they don't really tell you the story, do they? Except that there's a witch and some people might have died and...
Heather's a bad director.
She is, yeah. And also her, like, hokey, like, faux serious narration at the beginning. I get she was, like, trying to kind of be satirical there, but still, it was, like, I don't know. I feel like it would have been a lot more interesting to get actual narration on the witch and its history, because they did such a good job creating that history.
No, I agree 100%. It was just, I don't know. Again, like, it felt like a student movie.
Yeah.
Which it was supposed to, but, like, just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So, run up the stairs instead of out of the house, the dumbest decision award. I feel like this will be easy for us to
totally
give away because we don't like anyone.
Yeah. I think we're actually in agreement on this.
Fucking map, right?
Throwing away the map. Why did you throw away the map?
He loses his mind.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, if you don't want her to read the map, then, like, put it in your pack. He just, like, kicks it into a stream.
It felt, I get it, it's a movie, mm-hmm. but it was such a dumb plot device.
Yeah.
Like, I would have rathered it fell out of her hand when he, like, if he had, like, knocked it out of her hand.
Right? Yeah, I agree. And then she, like, physically attacks him.
Yeah.
That was a little weird.
The whole thing, they're just so stupid. Yeah. I don't know.
But I think we have to take any of these decisions with a grain of salt because I think they're under the sway of the witch. So even though they're making dumb decisions, it's possible that the witch had decided that she, like, had them and no one was getting out of those woods no matter what.
And, like, they sort of show that because he starts laughing in a really creepy way.
Yeah.
It's, like, maniacal. And, like, this is a character that, from all the characters, you've kind of got, like, okay, he's the most level-headed one. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. It's an interesting choice to have him be the dumbass of, like, fuck this map, I kicked it, ha 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 ha.
Right, right.
But just a bad, dumb choice altogether.
Real bad choice.
But also, like, making the documentary was a pretty bad idea.
Yeah, it was.
Too.
Right.
Because I don't think that she strikes me as a sort of person, and they present her as that, like, doesn't really know what she wants. Like, they're always mocking her. Like, she's always filming. Like, you always have the camera out because she doesn't really know what she's doing. So, like, having Heather in charge is kind of a dumb decision, too.
Right. And then also related to that, like, camping in the woods, like, I don't understand why they're going. I guess they're going to get a shot of, like, Coffin Rock or something.
Yeah,
but then why are they still in the woods?
Yeah, man, I don't know.
Right? It's just like, what are the shots that they were hoping to get that they had to, like, go deep into the woods and camp overnight for?
See, again, I think that's a Heather thing. Like,
right.
She was just kind of like, I just want really cool, like, you know, aesthetically pleasing shots of trees.
Right. Like, let's just do it and film everything and see what we get.
How would you have survived?
Great question. Again, I don't know if I could have survived. Because we're not dealing with, like, a psycho killer. We're dealing with a supernatural witch.
But I feel like you've got a pretty... You're not stubborn, but I feel like you've got a pretty, like, thick exterior that it would be hard for a supernatural thing to get to you, to be honest.
I would not resort to panicking so quickly the way these people did.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. I feel like you've got a lot more level-headedness to you than you're kind of like, oh, no, first feeling.
Right. I feel like I would have tried, if we were going deep in woods I'd never been in, to, like, remember which way, north, south, east, west, the car was, and... You can always just walk in one direction until you hit a road and then follow the road. And, like, you may have a really difficult day or two. And obviously, like, you have to drink water. But, like, again, this isn't Alaska. This isn't, like, Saskatchewan where you can walk for a month and not see civilization. This is, like, suburban Maryland.
Yeah, Josh even says it. He's like, this area isn't that big. Like,
right.
Let's just pick one direction. Josh tries to get them to just walk in one direction, and the other two are, like, not having it.
Yeah, although, and then I think towards the end of the movie, don't they, like, walk south or something all day, and then at the end of the day, they end up back where they... So that makes me think, like, the witch is, like, bewitching
them. Making
them
go in circles.
Yeah.
So I think you would have been the Josh, because I think she takes Josh first because he is...
Yeah.
He's the hardest egg to crack. Like, even once mm-hmm. this creepy shit starts happening at night, he's kind of like, it's nothing, like, it's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you wouldn't survive. You'd be the Josh.
Yeah, I would have got to take it. The noises the first night would not have worried me. I'd be like, that's interesting. That's weird. I would not have said, oh, that must be a homicidal witch.
Right.
I mean, like, I don't know, like, rocks are falling down or, like, a tree's rubbing up against a rock or so. Like, there are... Like, you know, things happen in the woods.
There are legit things that are happening in the woods.
Yeah.
God, I don't know. I wouldn't survive. One, I wouldn't survive in general because I hate camping. So
You wouldn't have gone in. You would have survived because you
were
like, fuck this.
Again, it's like the same thing with cabins.
I
would have lived because I would be like the person like, hey, y'all, you know what? I'm going to watch the car. and hope for the best that you come back.
Yeah, I'm going to get B-roll of the town while you guys...
I think that I would probably be the Heather character. Because I'm like the total opposite of you. That not that I would panic immediately, because I don't, I think I'm pretty level-headed, but I 100% believe in like ghosts and like all of these supernatural things. So like at the first moment of like possibly being a witch, I'd be like, oh, it fucking is. We must do what we can to make her happy. So I think I would, I wouldn't survive. I'd make it to the end at least. I'd probably be the last person that she killed.
Yeah.
But also because I'm kind of dumb and I'd be like, I want to go check out the house. I want to see where all of this happened. My curiosity would have gotten the best of me.
Yeah. I mean, I would have also wanted to check out the house. But because my skepticism would have gotten the best of me. I mean, like, why not go? Because, like, it's just a house. Like, it's, there's no witches in the woods. It's just the woods. I've discovered abandoned houses in the woods and I'm
have
still
you?
Alive. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And you go into them?
Yeah. There are a couple around Massachusetts where I grew up. And again, like Maryland, we're not talking like deep northern woods or something. Like these are just suburban woods. But yeah, you go like a mile or so in the woods and there's just like an old house.
That's so weird.
It is.
That's so creepy. So the historical context of this movie, we've talked about it a little, holds such a special place in horror movie history. Do you want to talk a little bit about like Blair Witch and what it meant in 1999?
Yeah. This is being released kind of on the tail end of when Wicca was cool, which it briefly was in the like late 90s, with movies like The Craft coming out, and also like artists like Lorena McKenna and Sarah McLachlan to an extent. I think there was this upwelling of like feminist thought and like new expression, and not like a sexual revolution, but like a sort of claiming of women's sexuality. I may be like grasping a little bit here, but I feel like Wicca was part of this upwelling because people were starting to like validate alternative lifestyles in a big way.
Totally.
Wicca became like a very marketable thing, and this movie plays on it, but plays on it in kind of an anti-witch way, and it's interesting. I mean, the New York Times even wrote an article about how this movie was giving witches a bad name, as opposed to like all the positive press that witches and Wiccans and pagans had been getting in the late 90s. So it is kind of an interesting moment. There's the emergence of horror, but there's also this brief moment where like witchcraft was cool. And so I think this is part of that whole like wave too.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree with that. I mean, if we think about like Buffy and Willow, like when
right.
she becomes a witch, there's like a couple episodes, if I'm remembering correctly, where she's kind of a bitch because she's a witch. And
right.
It's like, no, don't do that. Yeah. Like
Dark Willow, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's yeah. the sort of thing where I think that we went from thinking that witches were really cool because of The Craft to thinking that witches were evil and to blame. We need, the American culture needs something to kind of like have a panic about. So like we had the satanic panic and like demons and stuff, and like now it's witches. And then, you know, after that, it's our government, but it's the sort of thing that like, it's just super weird. It's a super weird like trend for the witch trend to end mm-hmm. on, because it sort of was, I think you're completely right. Like in the rest of the 90s, like being a witch was really cool. And like mm-hmm. definitely with feminism and like taking, you know, control of your own destiny and your own power, to suddenly like, oh, but like, the witches can't control their emotions. Like, it becomes a sort of, like, anti-woman sort of feeling, which is really weird.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there are elements of Heather's character in the movie that do play on, like, hysterical stereotypes. That
totally.
Are still 100%. Around. Yeah.
They spend so much time clearly mocking her for being upset that they're laughing at her, and they're like, all of our shoes are getting wet, Heather. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
But, like, as a viewer, you're made to be like, yeah, Heather's just being overdramatic.
Right. Almost like everything would be fine if Heather wasn't just being so unreasonable.
And it's like, oh, so not the case. Like, y'all are losing your minds. So it's a weird lens to sort of, like, view, I think, the late 90s in,
mm-hmm.
Going into, like, the early aughts. But it also makes a lot of sense with everything that was going on thematically, like with television. Like, I feel like supernatural sort of things were a big deal in the late 90s.
Yeah, definitely.
So it I think that's why people were so excited to sort of see it, because we were talking about witches and demons on like our TVs every night, and like Angel and Buffy.
Yeah.
So it slid into those fans totally, like, easily.
Yeah, I agree.
And we still talk about this movie to today because of not the movie, but I think the marketing of it, which I think says a lot about this movie, that we don't talk about how amazing it is visually, that we talk about the fact that this was at the age of the internet, and that's what made this movie so special.
Yes.
Is a weird thing to think about going forward, especially with found footage. Because like I said, I think it's the sort of thing that switches with technology.
Yeah.
And it's not the technology that's being used in this movie. It's what was used to promote it. Interesting to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. So this movie now, it's weird to think about making Blair Witch now, because it is so iconically the beginning of a trend. But like, what do you think this movie would be like if it was made now?
It was remade. I will say that.
Oh, it was. I forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't. I got really drunk when I saw it because it was not good.
Uh-huh.
And of course, played a drinking game in this movie theater. But I think this movie now, you don't have that magic of the internet anymore, because we all know the Blair Witch isn't real at this point.
Right.
I think that if you do make this movie now, you would have to capitalize on the idea that someone is so obsessed with this movie that they start killing.
Oh, yeah.
I think that it goes from a found footage movie to a slasher, to be perfectly honest with you.
Interesting, yeah.
What do you think this movie is now?
I think this movie now is Slender Man.
Oh.
Right? I think
what do you mean?
So, like, what you were saying about the horror, that, like, the idea you'd have to put forth to really convince people is that someone's so obsessed with this, they start killing. And I'm thinking about the Slender Man killings, those two girls who killed their friend because of Slender Man, and how there's a documentary that I watched that was pretty good on it, but that's the sort of thing you would have to capitalize on. And I think that Slender Man is in many ways like the heir of the Blair Witch.
I could see that, you know? Yeah.
Like the internet created folktale.
Oh my God, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the technology would be different. Obviously, it's a lot harder to get lost in the woods these days, as we've mentioned before. But yeah, I just think it would be, I don't know, whatever the Slender Man myth is right now.
I have a question for you. So if this movie now, how would you cast it? Like, would you cast it younger than they actually are?
I would cast it, yeah, probably a little bit younger than the people in this movie are. Yeah, I'd probably like get like 22-year-olds to play like 19-year-olds.
Yeah, I think like this sort of movie would have to be really young folks, because I think it's the idea of like youth is, you know, innocence, and like you believe everything. Like I would understand the panic more if it were not, you know, I'm not going to watch a 28-year-old like be afraid of the woods, but
right.
I can totally believe like a 22-year-old going like, oh no, we're lost forever.
Right. I don't know how to do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, totally.
So this is the first movie in our found footage arc.
Yeah. So we next week have a movie called The Last Broadcast, which you have seen and I have not. It is the actual, apparently, correct us, internet, if we're wrong, found footage movie. Predates The Blair Witch by about a year.
Yes, it definitely does. It's the first Western culture found footage movie.
Mm-hmm.
But people didn't talk about it enough. We all just love Blair Witch.
Yeah. And then we are, after that, doing Paranormal Activity, another classic of the genre. Then we're doing Rec or Record, depending on how you pronounce it. It is the Spanish found footage zombie film that is one of my favorite horror movies. I think one of the scarier movies I have ever seen.
Whoa, I'm excited.
Fun, yeah.
And then we're ending on VHS.
VHS.
Which is one of my favorite movies because I love a good anthology.
And it's got such a great framing tool. So we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, so let us know what you think. Do you love the Blair Witch Project? Do you think that it's a good found footage movie? Do you think that it's not a found footage movie and it's more of a psychological thriller? Let us know. We're at Jump Scare Pod on all platforms. And yes, thanks, y'all.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Jump Scare is a Mischief Media podcast. What is Mischief Media? A podcast network that takes stories seriously. Mischief Media is extraneous, a podcast that goes deep on the stories you love and comes back with a little something extra, including, right now, Supernatural and His Dark Materials. By the way, guys, I co-host the His Dark Materials pod. The HBO series is premiering next month. It's all happening. You should listen. What else is Mischief Media? Make new mistakes. Only the coolest business podcast around. Make New Mistakes is about being in business, being in charge, and being the ones to screw it all up. Melissa and Takiya host it. They are amazing, and they really get into the nitty-gritty of what it's like to be two women running a serious business in New York City, anywhere. It's a really rewarding and educational podcast. I encourage you to check it out. Also, A Story Most Queer. Short fiction and nonfiction stories from some of the most exciting queer voices out there. Mischief Media, we take stories seriously.